Oh, yes.
How to practice. Start by digressing. I was giving a talk one day and someone said, "Well, where's your notes?" And I said, I don't take notes. And they were so disturbed that I keep trying to remember to bring some notes to just at least look like I have them. I forget those too. So here at the center, we are in the midst of what is called our practice period, popularly known as 27 Days of Change. It's borrowed from a Buddhist tradition of going inward into the monastery, because unlike some traditions, largely the Buddhist tradition, in the Buddhist tradition, monks went around begging. That was mostly what they did. And then they had a period of time where they had intensive practice for about 3 months. In the Japanese Zen tradition, it's called Ango. And it means peaceful dwelling. Well, in my experience, it was anything but. So, given that we live urban lives, we take that 90-day period and we break it up throughout the year. So we have three of these throughout the year, and we have one, at least one, session, or we call them now our inner justice intensives. And that kind of roughly gets us to the 90 days. Hence the topic of the talk. How to practice. The person who most comes to mind when I think about the notion of practice is Abraham Heschel. He's a Jewish theologian. He's quite vigorous in supporting civil rights and protesting the Vietnam War. And what he said was, life is a war that can't be won by the noble magic of merely remembering a golden rule. Life is a war that can't be won by the noble magic of merely remembering a golden rule. He meant that we have to do something about it. That if we want to win this war of life, that we have to participate. We have to get in there. And a few golden rules rattling around in the back of our head isn't going to quite get it. A lot of people are disturbed by the any kind of language, especially in our at least mildly progressive circles, disturbed by any kind of language that suggests war. Of course, particularly the Tibetan Buddhist tradition is just riddled with it. It's all about war. You have all these wrathful deities and all this like stuff going on and conquering and slaying things. And you know, if you see the Buddha on the road, kill him. All that business. And we get all prickly about that. And I think that when we do that, what we deny is something about the fundamental nature of human beings in relationship to other human beings. Maybe not the nature of human beings by themselves, maybe perfectly peaceful. But once we try to occupy some of the same spaces at the same time, no pun intended, or no reference intended, the same spaces at the same time, we are prone to conflict. Heck, we're prone to conflict in here. Why would we be prone to conflict out there? And of course, the references made to conquering are about conquering the hindrances to your own awakening. That there is no other real enemy other than the enemy of the self. That misunderstands what is important in life, to get rid of all of the esoteric jargon. So after some years of practice and some years of teaching, I came down to the wild conclusion that mostly we don't succeed at change because we get in our own way. I usually say we don't want to. Change, that is. But if we just assume for a moment that we at least do want to change, the primary reason that we don't is because we get in our own way. So I hope to cobble together a few ideas about how we might alter that. The first thing is right motivation. That we actually have to have an appropriate motivation for practicing at all, because let's face it, it's easier to nap. Right? I mean, literally, on the cushion, right? Yeah. In the pew, in the temple, on your knee, wherever, it's easier to nap. And figuratively, it's easier to go to sleep on yourself, to just go back to sleep. And we have a wonderfully accommodating culture that supports napping at every possible moment. Fascinatingly accommodating for this purpose. So in the very beginning, let me just say that the right motivation is anything that'll get you there. In the very beginning, that's the right motivation. You wanted to be better than someone, you need to prove something to your mother, you're trying to reject your own lineage. You know, you're a Jew running away from your Jewishness. You're a Christian running away from your Christianness. You're a atheist running away from your theist or not theistist. Whatever it is, when you first begin, anything is the right motivation. But after a while, it won't suffice. It doesn't take long for us to come to the conclusion that we as human beings are frail and faulty creatures, and disappointing to boot. That we ourselves, in our own intention to make things happen, fall down on ourselves regularly. Mm-hmm. So if we just do this for ourselves, yeah, not so much. That's why the diet industry is booming. That's why the exercise machine on the infomercial machine, industry is booming too. Because we buy all those machines and we get them for like 5 minutes and then we stick them in our closet until the next one comes out. I have at least 5 myself. So eventually, the right motivation must be something greater than yourself. Mm. Different traditions or different paths. What that may be could be different. It could be union with the divine, to know God, to know yourself, to discover your Buddha nature, or as most traditions espouse in some kind of way, for the sake of all other beings. Because what else would we be here for? All of us in our differing ways and strangeness, plopped here together, mixing all over the place, boundaries completely gone now. What other useful way is there to spend our time here? But then to be of service to the upliftment of everyone. To seek the safety and security and self-determination of everyone else. Does that make sense? In one of the texts, many texts, they have, they say that first you give food and safety. And then you give teaching. That's the second highest thing you can do. But the most high is to give the gift of fearlessness. That if you can impart fearlessness to others, which basically comes down to encouraging people to be willing to show up for themselves, regardless of the conditions. Fearlessness. Not, you're not afraid of anything, but the willingness to show up for yourself, regardless of the conditions. That's the most high. And that is the most esteemed motivation, is that you are, that you function in your life in a way that is organized around being a model and saying, if I can do this, so can you. Come on. Right. Not being better than, that's in the beginning. Ultimately saying, if I can do this, so can you. Even if you never speak the words, the mere fact that you show up for yourself, the mere fact that you are present to your own life and to the lives of others, has a magnetism that is hard to resist. So the right motivation is, I think, that we have to be willing to get beyond the content of the things that we do. Right? This is often a deterrent to practice. That we focus on the content. Well, I meant this. Well, what happened was I did that, and then this happened. Well, I couldn't get up. Because last night, we come up with all kinds of reasons. I had to eat this. Right? We were just changing ordinary things like our diet, right? Not to be on a diet, but to have a more healthful fare in our life. Well, I ate this because I was thinking that tomorrow I would do something better. I was just not feeling well today, so I needed a little bit extra. I'm in a bad mood. The excuses are endless that we come up with. Right? Does anybody having ready excuses. Yeah. Even the things you committed to, got ready excuses for that? Mm-hmm. Anybody?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah. I have like a template of them. Just keep them in my pocket in here, you know. Just, which one shall I whip out when I'm avoiding whatever it is that I'd like to do? But we need to get beyond the content, because if you think about it, the specific details, they don't matter so much. I mean, honestly, how much of most of what you've done do you remember? Really? I'm having a hard time with before I took a nap today. I don't remember. And when you ask somebody to tell you about someone else, they don't tell you what they've done, they tell you how they be. They're like this. They're very kind. They're very scratchy. She's fairly difficult. Rather detailed. Very exuberant. Actually kind of dull. A little bit listless. Whatever it is. I mean, we get things like, right, time-bound things like their job or something like that. They work for this or that, blah, blah, right? But no one gives you a list of, like, they meant to do this. Right? They intended to make this kind of change. What they tell you is not what they did, but the pattern that shows up in terms of who they are. The pattern. Because the content disappears. And what's left is the pattern of our behavior that leaves the imprint upon people as to who we are. Does that make sense? It's not so much like, well, I mean, once in a while there are people that do like some kind of extraordinary act, and so we remember that act. But that's fairly rare, actually. And it's not generally the first thing that comes to mind, unless it's a person that's notorious for some particular act. We remember the quality of someone showing up in life, and that quality is expressed by their pattern of behavior. It's the imprint that they leave behind. It's the imprint that you are leaving behind. I love good intentions. And they're not good enough to practice, to change. Your good intentions will get you halfway there. Maybe. Maybe. Stretching.
Yeah.
It's the feet on the ground that are going to make the difference. And the willingness to get beyond, I call this the don't believe your own bullshit rule. Right? The stories that you tell yourself about why you couldn't effect change in your life. The stories you tell yourself about why you couldn't effect change in your relationship to other people because they're doing this. And they're doing that. And they never, and they always. What's important is the patterns that somehow, no matter where I go, airplanes are always determined to keep my stuff. Right? They're just determined. It doesn't matter what airline it is, they're just determined to keep my stuff. and it was the stewardess's fault, and it was the person next to me fault. You know, I had something and it got down between the seat and they put their jacket on top of it, and that's why I left it. I'm telling you a story about why I was about my leaving my things all over the place. Right? I used to leave things everywhere, like a pigeon, droppings every place. And I would tell these stories about all the things that happened. Like, this is what happened when I got out of the cab, and this is what happened when I was in the supermarket, and I had all these reasons why I left the things wherever I went. This is from, you know, quite young. But somehow, I always managed to lose my stuff. And I often tell the folks here that, you know, what we want to lose is our baggage. Right? But in the meantime, I need to keep a hold of my things. And the only way that I could do that is to stop telling myself the story of why it happened and get to the truth of somehow that's always happening to me. That wherever I go, there I am. Without my stuff. And that wherever you go, there you are. Right? That you know that you have things that occur in your life that somehow occur to, with, and by you. But they don't quite happen that way for other people. And we have to wake up to that and be willing to put aside the content of what we meant, the content of what we hoped for, the content of how it ought to have been different this time, so that we can be honest and truthful with ourselves, that we have thus far constructed a certain pattern to showing up in particular ways. And if we want to work out why, that's what therapists are for. But we do have to get clear about the fact that it's not working for us and that we need to do something about it. And we can't do anything about it if we aren't willing to be honest with ourselves that it's happening. If we shift the blame, if we shift the reasoning, if we constantly put it off someplace else, we end up with the same thing over and over again. And that might be okay, right? Because, you know, it's up to you. Some things, ways that we are, you know, they're working for us in some ways. But in fact, anything that you're doing is working for some part of you. Anything that you're repeating is working for some part of you. And maybe whatever it is isn't enough to tackle. But if there is something about that you want to change, and you have the right motivation, you have to be willing to get out of the content and take a broad view of your life and look at the way that you are showing up in the world. Listen to the people that tell you. Also remembering, however, that you have probably trained everyone around you to shut up about the things that you don't want to hear. We have good practice with that. In fact, if you're not hearing any critique, it's time to shuffle your people around a little bit. Does that make sense? We're really good at training people to not talk about that. Don't say anything about that. Even our best friends, our closest comrades, learn very quickly not just from you. They learned it themselves in their own upbringing. What not to say. So you have to be willing, right? Because you've already created a house of delusion for yourself. And the only person that can really take it down is you. And finally, and I have to say with emphasis that this one doesn't matter without the first two. In fact, it's terribly irresponsible in some ways without the first two in place. Let go of the outcomes. You gotta let go of the outcomes. Because ultimately the fixation on outcomes keeps us in a cycle of not being able to have joy as we make our way through our lives, as we move through change. And then it's not worth it. If what we create for ourselves is just another place of being downtrodden and pained and everything is awful and it's all terrible, then the whole motivation thing really, you know, gets by the wayside pretty quickly. Mm. And when we fixate and focus too much on the outcomes, we have a way of losing track of the journey. We create separation between what they would call the path and the goal. But truthfully, the beginning of the end is always right now. So instead of casting our eyes far out into the vision of ourselves, whatever it is that we eventually will become, and then kind of waiting for it to descend or land or, I don't know, what's that word, effervesce, you know, it's like the Alka-Seltzer kind of thing.
Effervesce
upon us. You can just take a step and shorten the distance between here and there immediately by taking action, taking the step right now, and then the next step, and then the next step. That's not to say don't have goals, right? Because that's the whole deal, is that we have a goal, but we release the outcomes. I'm fond of saying the outcomes are none of our business. That our job is just this moment. That our attention is right here and right now. Gathering everything we have available in this moment, not yesterday's moment, not what was possible when you were thinking about this goal, but just this moment, giving everything you have available with joy and hopefully a little chagrin for the effort itself. I like to call it sweet chagrin. That's what is ours to attend to this very moment. The best thing about that is this. Having given your effort and attention to each moment as it unfolds, regardless of the outcome, you experience the joy of being. You experience the joy of having been true to yourself. You experience the joy of having been in alignment with your truth, having made your best effort. And if it didn't work out the way that you intended, so be it. I've never met anyone that gave their best effort without focusing on the outcomes, that wasn't completely at peace with whatever happened on the other end. Completely at peace. Not that they didn't say, would have been nice if it had gone the other way. But in here, they're good. Because in here, they don't have to say, well, I could have given that little bit. You ever do that in a relationship? It falls apart and you think, oh, I could have. There was just that little bit I was holding back. Or you decide you want to accomplish something and your fear of actually getting what you want had you hold back just that little bit and you watch it disappear from your grasp. Some teachers might say that's okay. I think it sucks. I don't think it sucks that you missed out on what you want. I think it sucks that you have the regret because you knew you could have given more. Because you knew you held back. That's the only thing that ever sucks. When you have to live with the awareness that you didn't show up for yourself. But if you did, and if you do, and after today I expect that all of you will, you have nothing to fear, and you will truly be a giver of fearlessness.